Standing in the shadows of love, I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. Can't you see me standing in the shadows of love? I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. I want to run, but there's nowhere to go. Cause heartaches will follow me.
That was Levi Stubbs and the Four Tops with Standing in the Shadows of Love. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, a grassroots talk show that's on a new mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that are changing our lives and charting America's new course for the future. I'm your host, recently retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years, but now I'm stepping into the light. And together with my brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, we want to start a dialogue with America about the truth, because it's what happens in the shadows that changes the world. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just going to bring forth the experts and who have been there to give us information so we can make educated decisions, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. And tonight we have a friend of the show and a very special guest. I'm so honored to have Marianne Williamson. Marianne Williamson ran for the Democratic nomination for the President of the United States in 2020 and 2024. She also ran for the House of Representatives. She recently ran for chair of the Democratic National Committee, and we want to talk to her about that. She's a successful entrepreneur, best-selling author, a political activist, global influencer, spiritual thought leader, amazing human being, and we're just so happy that you're taking time to be with us tonight, Marianne. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to be here with you.
Well, let's start at the top. I have, and feel free to jump in here anywhere, Liberty, but I want to start with something that I read this morning, the Introduction to Common Sense by Thomas Paine. He said, when my country, into which I just set foot, was set afire about my ears, it was time to stir. It was time for every man to stir. Is it time for everybody to stir, Marianne? Is this a time for all of us to stir?
Absolutely, and for the same reasons. Of course, when he published that, that really, really did ignite the flame that became, of course, the American Revolution. I don't know if you, I assume, Michael, do you know Harvey Kay?
Yes.
Harvey is, of course, the person who knows all things Thomas Paine. It's past time to stir, Michael. We are, the American people have been a step behind. The forces of authoritarianism and dictatorship have been marching. And at this point, if we don't arouse, if we don't stir, and if we don't act, then American democracy, certainly as we know it, will have passed into the annals of history. And I think it is no less serious than that.
Well, you know what? My problem is that I agree with you 100%, but I feel like this was the message that we put out in 2024, and it didn't work. That people said, we care more about the price of eggs and the price of gas than we care about democracy. Do you think that's true? Was our message wrong as liberal Democrats, or did we just not go about it right, or do we have the wrong message?
Well, remember who you're talking to here. We were saying that we cared about democracy, but the entire campaign was based on the suppression of democracy. Shortly after Biden got into office, Ron Klain and others put out a memo that there would be no primary in 2024.
Right.
The very fact that the Democratic Party just chose, basically anointed Biden, scaring away anyone else and de-amplifying anyone who had the audacity or naivete, or depending on the day, to say, well, I'm going to run anyway, was de-amplified, in some ways viciously so. And then even when Biden did step aside, once again, they just chose Kamala. So there was such a hypocrisy built into it. We got to save democracy, yeah, but they felt that they had the right, the entitlement, and somehow that it was the righteous thing to do, given that what they perceived as Trump's threat to democracy was so great that they were going to suppress it in our own house. So there's more than a message that's involved here, and that's the righteousness of the messenger. So the Democratic Party, you know, I think subconsciously everybody knows everything. And people could smell that. People could smell the hypocrisy of the process. During what should have been a robust primary season, CNN was doing CNN town halls with the Republican candidates. They were having debates. So there was an entire year and a half there where the Democrats, excuse me, where the Republicans were just, they were taking up all the oxygen, their conversations, Vivek Ramaswamy, Nikki Haley. I mean, they were all out there talking. And the Democrats were told to shut up. We were all supposed to just stand in line, not even
yes.
listen to any opponent to the president. And then they come along at the end and they say, we're fighting for democracy, when for the last year and a half, when regardless what you think about the Republicans, they have been practicing it. That's a lot bigger problem than just messaging.
Yes, it is a much bigger problem, much tougher problem to deal with. Hey, Liberty Jones, you want to jump in here? What do young people think about this?
You know, those are some brilliant points. I do believe that everyone subconsciously does know what's going on. But I think one of the greatest issues we have right now is that the people fear the government. And it should be that the government fear the people. That's when liberty arises. And I think I'm loosely quoting Thomas Jefferson on that. But I think that's our biggest issue. I want to better understand. You guys come from a time of such love. And, you know, I feel that spirit in my generation. But I see that the kids nowadays, they're not unionizing. They're not joining together. They're not protesting. This is all happening. Everyone around me is in tears about it. But no one is actually doing anything. Is it that fear has desensitized us to the point where we don't want to act? How can we remind our people what the United States meant to be, which is the land of the free, and move away from this deeply ingrained fear that's just being re and revitalized by our current institution, and so that we can move to the people, to the, give the people the independence and the liberty and the love that they deserve to want to join together and actually have a government that supports them and not a government that governs them. Having a government that supports society and not a government that governs people. And I know that's a complicated sentence right there, but how can we move back to that?
Yeah, Marianne,
Michael,
how
you,
can we?
Well,
we had a great
well,
spirit, right? Right, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, you brought up a lot. I don't know if Michael and I came from a time of such love, but we did come from a time of much greater audacity. And we felt that our protests could make a difference. When Michael and I were young, the Democrats were the cool people who shouted out, hell no. We traded places with the Republicans, I'm afraid to say. This is very ironic and darkly ironic and very painful to admit, but the Republican power elite is more afraid of Republican voters than the Democratic power elite is afraid of Democratic voters. Starting with the Tea Party, and even with MAGA, they will be very, very loyal, for instance, to Donald Trump. But when they see something they don't like, they shout about it. And the truth is, that's very American. You know, hell no to tyranny was supposed to be the battle cry of America. That's why we fought King George, you know, when he showed up before. And we have lost our revolutionary spirit. But more so on the left, I'm afraid to say, than even on the right. Is it fear? What I think it is a kind of complacency, kind of like in the book Brave New World. I think a lot of that complacency comes from the fear of losing approval, losing clicks, losing brand, brand power and privilege. And the Democrats fell into this slavish, and I have to say almost cult-like obedience, as it were, to the will of a bunch of white men at the top of the Democratic Party. So what I experienced when I ran was not just serious disappointment and almost disbelieving upset at the shenanigans of the Democratic Party. But what was really depressing was how many traditional Democrats were willing to go along with that. So yes, we've lost our revolutionary fervor, and on the left even more than on the right. I think that this is where we are now, as a matter of fact, and that takes us to this moment, and this takes us to Thomas Paine. You know, I was at a gathering the other night, and the people were there who were all people in this town who are, to some extent, highly placed in this town. You know, they're players, okay? And there was not one person in that gathering who didn't see what is happening. I mean, you have to be adult not to see what's happening now.
Yeah.
And yet one of the people said, "I just can't believe nobody's doing anything." And I thought, that's where we're in trouble. Who does that person think is going to do something? It has to be something that arises in each and every one of us. And I think that it is time for fierce citizenship. This is not a time to look around. Well, is the DNC going to do it? Is the Democratic Party going to do it? Is the Senate going to do it? Is the House going to do it? Is Hakeem Jeffries going to do it? It's got to be that we ourselves, that stirring that Thomas Paine was talking about, a stirring within ourselves, this will not stand. And I know, Michael, you have children. Libby, I assume you don't have children yet. Is that correct?
I do not.
Okay. Well, when you have children, you're going to experience something that Michael and I have already experienced. Michael, tell me if I'm wrong. When your kids, usually around the teenage years, usually something connected to drug, sex, or alcohol, right, Michael? And you
Yeah.
sense that their behavior might be dangerous. Something so fierce arises in you, something so fierce, and you tell your children, that will not be happening in this house. Do you understand? Now, inside, you actually don't know yet what you would do if they continued, but you know that you will do something. And that's where we have to be right now. This will not stand on our watch. We will not be the generation of Americans who allows the fascists to take over. We will not be the generation of Americans who kind of wimp out on the assignment to push back on tyranny. Now, I think that while it is true, there are people just waiting for someone else to do something. There are people who say, well, there's nothing we can do. There are people who are buying lots of land and Costa Rica, right, and planning to move to Portugal. That's true. But I believe that if you look around, you look at the protests of the veterans, you look at the pushback from some of these very brave judges, you look at some of the protests, people, I think there is a stirring. Now, there's way too much caving. Columbia University is caving. Universities are caving. Law firms like Paul Weiss is caving. But I think that there are a lot of people who don't want to cave, who understand we must not cave. Everybody has to hold the line. That's why I'm so disgusted by Columbia University, why I'm so disgusted by these law firms. Hold the line. No one can cave now. And I think that that's the psychological process that many, many people are experiencing. So if you look at American history and you look at the arc of American history, starting with the Thomas Paines, never has there been a time yet, and please, dear God, may we not be the first, to not ultimately rise up in the face of tyranny and forces of injustice. So I think that those are the processes going on inside people right now. You know, my hope is that people listening to the show right now are thinking, yeah, I got to hold the line within myself. That's what we need, is enough of us who are saying, I will not cave.
Well, lots of the things that you're saying, Marianne, the scariest thing is that you and I, and actually Liberty as well, came from the recent meeting of the Democratic Committee where you ran for chairman. And what did we see? We saw a repeat of the same old stuff that you're talking about, didn't we? We elected Ken Martin. Wasn't he the, isn't he the quintessential Democrat aren't we doing the same thing? We're electing white men to run the party and ignoring some of the other people. One of the things that really stood out, and it's funny that Liberty and I talked about this, was when we went to the debate for the vice chairs, there were so many vice chairs that they had to do it in two segments. But most of the men were in the first segment, and most of the women we're in the second segment. And the importance there is that as the night wears on and this thing gets longer and longer and longer, people tend to leave. So the men had a much bigger audience than the women did. And, you know, and the whole time I'm thinking, aren't we Democrats? Aren't we the people that are supposed to be promoting equality inside our party? But we're not even doing it inside the party. And this is all the stuff that you were talking about in the election. It's still going on. And I'm not exactly sure how we change that trajectory. But let me ask you about the culture war. I think this is very important with Trump sitting on the board of the Kennedy Center with the nonsense that they're doing with the Smithsonian. Now they're talking about the African-American Museum of Culture and History, how, you know, how it has to be reformed. They're taking Jackie Robinson off the website of the Marine Corps. I mean, I'm sorry, of the Army. What, you know, isn't this what the communists do, Marianne? Isn't that the first thing they attack is the culture? And you know, we're not burning books, but we're tearing down monuments, you know? And like you say, everybody's, or lots of people are capitulating who shouldn't be. Columbia, the law firms, Mayor Bowser taking Black Lives Matter off the streets. Everybody's afraid of this guy. So what do we need? Do we need a new leader that we can coalesce around? Is that what we need?
Well, first of all, you've brought up three distinctly different and all very important categories. First of all, this conversation about was just a bunch of white men. Jamie Harrison was a black man. So the idea that if only we had a black person, you know, we Democrats have got to get over the sort of almost silliness of a lot of the identity politics stuff as though that will fix it. Because I don't think it will. Number two, in terms of the men who were running for president, for chairman, you're absolutely right. Men are acculturated in this society still because of the patriarchal prejudice and so forth, to assume that they have a right to speak. And I can tell you as a woman, and I never felt this in my career as a writer, I never felt in my career as a spiritual speaker, I never felt the kind of misogynistic, who the hell are you, what gives you the right to speak, that I felt coming at me in politics. So you're right. The whole culture there is women can, you can run for vice president, but don't have the audacity to run for president. Yeah, because that's considered unattractive in a female, basically, is what they're saying.
Right.
The issue that you were talking about the culture war, and isn't this like the Soviet Union? Absolutely, it is. It's absolutely horrifying. It's authoritarianism on such a level. The idea that he's going to tell the Smithsonian what they can say. I mean, it's almost a joke. How's he going to say we can't have any DEI for the African American Museum? It's horrifying, and it's no different than a Columbia University. They're going to take the academic department of the Middle East Studies, African Studies, and Asian Studies and put them under quote-unquote academic receivership, where they will appoint a provost to say what they can and cannot discuss or read. It's horrifying. So this goes back to the original question, is it time to stir? It is past time to stir. We don't need one more. I mean, who knows what they're going to come up with this coming week? I was reading an article yesterday. Did you read about the German or the French scientist who was coming in to go to a conference here? And one of the agents at Customs read this person's texts or tweets or emails, and they said something critical about the president. And so this person was sent back. We have travel advisories. From other countries. Yeah, we're already past the point when you say, isn't this like communism or isn't this? Yeah, we're there. We are full on there. Once again, this is all the more reason why we simply cannot afford to cave. He wants to be in charge of every single sector of our society. He has no respect, or I don't even think any knowledge of what the role of a president is supposed to be, other than mafia boss, which is the role with which he's clearly comfortable.
Well, you know what? And before I let Liberty say something again, let me just tell you that this has been a hobby of mine. I grew up in an Italian neighborhood in Newark, New Jersey, where I heard all the stories about how the mob ran my neighborhood when my parents were growing up. So I've been, you know, my wife will tell you I've seen The Godfather 400 times or something. I mean, I'm so into it. And that's, I keep on thinking that, Marianne, it's so funny that you say that. I keep on thinking this isn't government. This is the, you know, the Don Corleone model of government. Get rid of your enemies.
He's a crime. He's a crime family. It's crime boss. And then Putin's another crime boss. And yeah, it's an international syndicate, really. You know who has written about this in a very powerful way and has been for a long time is Sarah Kendzior. Have you read her or had her on your show?
No, I have not. No.
Yeah, Sarah Kendzior has the receipts.
And let me ask you, Liberty, here we've spent, I've raised, daughters. I think Marianne has a daughter too. We told women they could be anything. Do you feel like you can be anything, Liberty? Do you feel like, you know, you're equal?
I feel like I'm equal because of who I am on the inside, not because of how the world is making me feel right now. And, you know, I have to comment on that as well. I think my grandmother is not from this country, and me and my grandma speak a lot about this. I think the whole world is on to this scheme, and I think the whole world is speculating that he is creating an authoritative regime, you know, especially where my grandmother is from. We had a dictatorship that was horrible. And because we suffered that pain, we were able to grow from it and we were able to see when it starts happening in somewhere else. The fact that we have Angela Davis book banned is a reality I would never believe to be real in this country. And so I feel equal, but the world isn't making me feel equal. The world is making me feel like I should be quiet, that I should run into a corner in fear either of the Democrats or the Republicans, because one of them is evil and one of them isn't. And, you know, I really do believe divide and conquer. I think they achieved that so beautifully that we're so busy looking at the other side that we're not able to look at ourselves. And, you know, Marianne was talking about this, but how will we ever grow and how will we ever stand on our grounding and say this is not going to happen on our watch if we're so preoccupied on the enemies instead of on our own competition with ourselves? So I don't know. To me, it's really heartbreaking that the world is trying to make me feel unequal to have power over me. And that's how I think a lot of girls in my generation feel right now, and men, people of all types and colors.
Well, I think that's very, something that Liberty said that I think is very true. Other countries are onto this, and they're not holding back, whether it's Canada or certain European leaders, the Australian prime minister. They realize what we're dealing with, and they're saying it. And we need to stand up to this guy as effectively as people in other countries. We're still questioning, is it time yet? No, it's beyond time. And I'm really impressed by the things people like Carney are saying. And I also think that one of the reasons other countries are standing up is because of what Libby said. They are closer. Let's say if you're in Germany, for instance, you know, and like Merz, first thing he did was he said, we have to deal with, you know, a world in which America is not our ally. We have become a rogue superpower. Well, Germans feel this particularly acutely because they went through Hitler. They know what this looks like. And so the critical mass of America, I don't think we lack a critical mass of Americans who understand what's going on. I think we lack a critical mass of Americans who understand the power of their own individual conviction as citizens, given, I think a lot of people are waiting for a leader to arise. And that's where a lot of the panic about, you know, the apparent fecklessness, we might say, of the Democratic Party comes in. Like you were talking about the DNC issue, Michael. But I don't think that this is a time of a soloist. I think it's a time of the choir. You and I come from a generation where we know what they do to soloists. If the whole,
Yeah.
cultural revolution is just led by some individuals, all they have to do is shoot the individuals. So this has got to be, that's not the zeitgeist of this moment. The zeitgeist of this moment is enough of us, each of us singing our own note. For Michael Brown, it's one thing. For Liberty, it's another thing. For Marianne Williamson, it's another thing. I had lunch with a woman today, once again, to hear her say this was interesting because she said it, and she is someone who is very empowered within the political power elite, right? And she said, well, all I can do is, and I made a comment, first of all, none of us should be thinking it because on the quantum level, any effort towards regeneration and repair is maximal. There are no small efforts or big efforts. There is only the effort backed by your full intention and conviction and that which isn't. And I also said to her, no man would say that. So this is really a time for us to assume the power of citizenship. Libby, it's time for you to channel your grandmother, and we do know. And there's something that happens when you just say, this will not happen on my watch. You don't have to know yet what you would do. You don't have to wait around for the so-called leader who's going to be the savior. The savior is within us. It's a fierce aspect of our own personhood. And that's what I think is happening. A lot of the activism right now is internal activism. People are working this stuff through. We are processing, and we shouldn't be ashamed of that. We are preparing, and I think that the moment for collective activation simply has not occurred yet. And you're pregnant with a child before you have the baby. We are
Yeah.
pregnant with this new beginning, and I think that there's a lot more going on than you might think, and we are. The Thomas, it is the Thomas Paine phase of things. It's not yet, Lexington and Concord hasn't happened yet. And I in a way want to take that back because that was violence and guns and stuff, and we don't want that. But so maybe a better image could have been used. That moment where, okay, it started. That's not here yet, but look how many people at that time when Thomas Paine wrote Common Sense, everybody was reading it. It was just a humongous bestseller at that time. And that's what I think is happening right now. People are thinking, people are talking. I think the most important thing right now is for us not to coddle, either in ourselves or in others, complacency, caving. I think that there needs to be a lot of healthy shame towards Columbia University. There needs to be a lot of healthy shame towards Paul Weiss and any other law firm that is willing to cave. We've got to hold the line and we've got to hold ourselves and I think our friends and colleagues accountable in our attitudes.
Well, you think this bullying attitude is internationally? We've just had this major gaffe, right? People are calling it Signalgate, where they left all this classified information, turned it over to a journalist, who, by the way, as Bill Maher pointed out on the show this week, even he left the chat. He left the chat earlier, the editor of The Atlantic. Because he understood this wasn't information that he should be seeing. And now we have these people standing up there saying that it wasn't classified information, that nothing was revealed. And as you say, Marianne, we all know this isn't true. I mean, is there any American out there that thinks that sending out specifics about targets and strike plans and attack modes and what time things are going to take place, that that's not classified information? It's crazy.
It's unbelievable,
So
isn't it?
yeah, I mean, this is, I mean, we see everybody from Jimmy Kimmel making fun of this to people seriously, even Republicans saying this is such a serious breach of protocol. Do we have to wait for more things like this to happen for the American people to wake up, you think? You think
Well,
we
that's none
coalesce
of
around
us.
these issues?
None of us really know the answer to that. I think that, I mean, there's so many things that could happen. Like, I mean, this could. There are. I
Yeah.
mean, that's the thing about this moment on any given day. I think the most, if I were going to bet on it, I think if there's a moment at which enough people will simply say, enough is enough on the Republican side. It will be when they get economically hit by this. The inflation that the tariffs will be causing, the president saying things like he doesn't even care, if the
Right.
Social Security checks start flowing, if the Medicaid payments stop flowing, when enough people who have been his loyal supporters. And now remember, like I said before, Republicans are at this point in our history more apt to be holding their leaders accountable than Democrats are.
Yeah,
If
unfortunately.
the Medicaid, the Social Security, if those stop, if the inflation gets high enough, it would seem to me, Michael. I mean, I don't know. Contrary to public opinion, I don't have a crystal ball, but I would think it would be when the economic squeeze gets so tight and people no longer are buying the BS coming from Musk and Trump about it. I don't know. When did the two of you think would be the moment where people would say it's enough enough? I mean, look,
Oh
at the
my.
Republican town halls already, there are Republicans at these town halls who are already screaming and yelling. I also think that they are not happy watching how people are being treated in these agencies. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And I don't know about Liberty, but I'm way past that point. I would have thought a long time ago people would have said enough is enough. When they said they're eating our cats and dogs, enough was enough. Enough for me. I would have never gone this far. And I really, it really flies in the face of everything that I've learned, Marianne, that I've helped train candidates that run for public office, and much of what we train them to do doesn't really hold anymore in politics. You never piss off women. Women vote more than men, and they make more of the population. Make up more of the population. This man, that's all he does is say disparaging things about, or did say disparaging things about women. You don't piss off the press. This guy fights constantly with the press. So I would have thought a long time ago that he would have done himself in. And that's why I was surprised to see him get reelected. Even though everything you said about the primary process was absolutely true, I still thought, well, we're not going to reelect him. We're going to reelect Kamala. We're going to elect Kamala because the alternative is just so horrible to think of. But again, for the second time, I was wrong. And so I don't know where the tipping point will come in, but I agree with you that we've always risen to the occasion. And since you and I are old enough, you just brought up the fact that one person, when individuals leads are easy to get rid of. Will we see another 1968? Marianne, you and I lived through 1968. We or the 60s. Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, Robert Kennedy. Are we going to see that again, you think?
Well, the problem is that in the 1960s, the government cared how many people
Yeah.
were on the street. Martin Luther King had a little over 200,000 people, I think, at the Lincoln Memorial. Black
Yes.
Lives Matter had many more than that. Black Lives Matter was the single largest protest movement in the history of the United States. The difference was when Martin Luther King had that many, the government went, oh my God, we got to do something. The people had spoken, as Libby, I think, was saying before. The government was afraid of the people. Oh my goodness, we have to have a Voting Rights Act. Oh my goodness, we have to have a Civil Rights Act. Today, you had BLM, and the government said, yeah, whatever, and couldn't, and the Democrats were not able to pass one single fundamental piece of legislation, not even the George Floyd Policing Act. So at this point, I think people are understanding that, I mean, we're all going to go. I assume you guys are going. I'll be out there in the street on April 5th. And I think that it'll be good for all. I think the value of April 5th, I think a lot of people will be out in the streets. And I think the value of it is that it will give encouragement to other people who are out in the streets. But in terms of the government caring, I think the activism, as Martin Luther King said, do not take our material passivity for weakness. For we are spiritually active. What I've been putting on my Substack and on YouTube and stuff are a lot of talk about the qualities of our personhood that are necessary at this point. You know, Einstein said we would not solve the problems of the world from the level of thinking we were at when we created them. I think there are a lot of internal changes that are going on, the way we think, the way we are placed within ourselves. So there's a lot of activism that's going on. There's a kind of new kind of activism. Don't count us out yet, Michael. Do not count us out. I'm not counting us out. I think this thing is far from over.
Well, I'm trying not to, Marianne, because I agree with you. I've seen us rise to the occasion more than once. And, you know,
right.
And I lived through some very hard political times in America, and I've seen us come back, and I hope that's the truth. Now, Marianne wants us to be active, to go to the streets, to you know, stand up for what we believe in. So Liberty, what do you think college students are willing to do?
You know, I think college students are willing to do a lot. I think they're training us right now to believe in the power of revolution, at least at my college here in DC, where that is a big topic of conversation. But I also agree with what Marianne has to say that I don't think, you know, I think we're kind of going through a rebirth right now in terms of thought and in terms of, let's say, like, evolution of the government, right? Clearly, democracy has not been working. Clearly, it's beginning to fail. It's time for a rebirth. You know, I really do agree with that. And I think that before that happens, there's always a, you know, before you're born, you go through 9 months of pain, maybe 3 months of intense pain. But I feel like we really need to suffer to allow that desire to flourish, and that desire will take us far. I think we're, you know, as sad as this is, I was taught that suffering stems from desire. And I don't think I see enough desire out there to make a difference. I think right now people are a little shell-shocked. They're still in the seven stages of grief. They're in denial. You know what I mean? So I think we need to allow the people to actually feel it affect them directly. Because a lot of the issues that we're facing, you know, a lot of these students here in DC are not feeling the full suffering. You know, a lot of people haven't met someone who was deported or haven't had to deal with that suffering. So I really hope that what we're talking about, you know, the inevitability of not a revolution, but let's say a re-empowerment of the people. I really hope that is inevitable, and I really hope it'll just take a little more suffering. You know, we have to keep in mind, it's been 3 months, really only 3 months of this. We have 3.5 years left. So I hope after 1 year, you know, we'll get to that point of desire and longing for a liberty that we used to know, that we'll be able to feel the need to reimburse ourselves as a collective. And I really hope that we do get there. I feel like the students are disheartened and they're not feeling right now the extent of the suffering that America as a nation, I think, is suffering through.
Well, let
and
me
it
ask
actually
you,
hasn't
Marianne.
Even been 3 months. What'd you say, Michael?
Yeah. I was going to say, you have a very loyal following, Marianne, people that love you. I've seen you in action. I've seen the people come to you. What are your people saying to you? Do they have the same kind of positive attitude that you're trying to put out there? Do you get that feedback from your constituents, the people that depend on you as a thought leader?
Well, you know, if somebody, I'm not sure you get a really clear view. I'm thinking of the people who respond to my Substack article. If I'm saying something and they respond, then it makes me think, oh, yeah, there's so much response. But what about the people who didn't? I think that we are living in a time of profound recalibration. There's a lot of jangling going on inside. People, you know, if you have any kind of a psychological or metaphysical perspective, the fact that things are changing on the inside, that we're all having to process, that we have to throw out the old paradigm, then you have a context for the kind of turbulence that you're going through. And the problem is that so many people do not have a psychological or spiritual or metaphysical perspective, and so they don't know what the hell is going on. And so there seems to be a lot of paralysis. It's like sometimes you have an emotional muscle cramp, you have a psychological muscle cramp, just like sometimes you have a physical muscle cramp, and so you seem paralyzed. And I think that's what I see in a lot of people. I see a kind of paralysis. But like I said, what I see is people working it through. The things that have upset me, I have to tell you, and I'm not happy to report this. I've seen some of my people go get lured over by Musk and Trump. Yeah, and it's heartbreaking to me. One of the things that Bobby Kennedy was able to do to achieve, Michael, was he took a lot of the wellness people with him. That crowd used to be pretty solidly in the Democratic camp. Everything Bobby was saying about food and all of that, I was also saying about food, our food supply. We had a sickness care system, not a health care system. We had to look at our food policies, environmental policies, chemical policies, pesticides. And so, once again, when so much of that was de-amplified, not heard, it makes me very sad because most of the food, for instance, a lot of the food warriors used to be, solid in the Democratic camp. So I'm seeing people all over the place. I see people scurrying to the left. I see people scurrying to the right. And I see a lot of people just standing there, but it doesn't make me think they're complacent. I just think they're processing. And I think even people who seem complacent at this time, I think at this point is what you guys said earlier, they're just afraid. But that's,
So
listen, we're not a monolith, right? We're 360 million people. So everybody's going through these times through the filter of their own life experience.
Well, and I think that's a mistake we make as liberal Democrats sometimes, is that we forget that we're not a monolith, and we say all feminists are like this, and all liberals are like this, and all, that we're single issue people, and we're not. So I think that's a mistake that we make over and over again. But how do we come? Were we more spiritually aware in the 1960s and 70s than we are today, Marianne? Do have we lost? Okay, go ahead.
I don't think that we were more spiritually aware, but we owned our humanity more. Nobody had yet told us you had to go into one lane. We were political, look at what the 60s was. It was a counterculture that was spiritual, it was political, it was sexual, it was musical, it was everything. And so it was a very alive time. Now you could call that spiritual, but I don't think we would have thought of it that way. We were on a lot of cylinders, and so much has been the edge has we've been de-edged, we've been de-juiced by so much that happened in the 70s. I think that the assassinations in the 60s really an entire generation went through PTSD without even knowing that's what happened to us. I think Reagan, I think that everything got nullified. We became consumers by the 80s. Greed is good. The middle class was destroyed, so everybody was put into this kind of economic survival mode. So we our humanity, our sense of fervor, our sense of yes to life, and with that the hell no to tyranny that sort of comes along with that yes to life. Everything we've become too soft. We've become soft bellied. We've lost our juice. And listen, I've seen it in my own career, Michael. I didn't see it in my other career, but because I feel I sort of have a bifurcated career lane here. But in the political, man, you are on the in the Democratic Party, full humanity is not appreciated. You're supposed to toe the line. We talk about how the Republicans are in a cult, but the traditional Democrats, it's a real cult-like feeling too. But I also think that a lot of people are realizing that's what got us here. So it's in process, but we've got to reclaim our full humanity. That's why I think sometimes right now reading literature is as important as reading nonfiction about politics. Reading history is really important now. People are reading Doris Kearns Goodwin. What did Franklin Roosevelt do? People are reading about Lincoln. People are reading Hannah Arendt. I mean, I used to hear my father talking about Hannah Arendt at the dinner table. I thought he was talking about something happened in World War II. I never in my million years thought it would be relevant to my own life circumstances. But people are reading Darkness at Noon. People are reading How Democracies Die. People are reading Heather Cox Richardson. People are reading Thomas Paine. So one world is clearly a world of disintegration, and there's another impulse of regeneration. And at this point, it's just a race for time. And I think every time you do a podcast like this, for example, why do any of us write articles, do podcasts? We're doing it in the hope that one person, if even one person, that's everything. Just do what you can. Do your podcast, do your article, do your protest, do your calls to the Congress people, do your calls to the White House, show up for the special election, think of running for office, get involved. And it's a collective, frisson that's happening. And it's a race for time. And listen, if you look on TikTok right now, right? If you look at Instagram, there is so much great content out there. Watch it, read it, learn, pass it on. I think that's happening too. So I think there's a death and there's an awakening, and I think they're happening simultaneously.
Do you think what do you think the election in Wisconsin and Florida that's coming this week? What do you think this is going to
Oh,
tell us? Is this a referendum on Musk
oh, so, oh,
and
absolutely. If we
Trump?
could win, if we could win that, if we could win that Wisconsin Supreme Court seat, if Josh Wild could win, or Valamont in what is her name? Gallimont, Val Gallimont, whatever that is
Yes.
in Florida, it will give us so much hope. If all our people lose, it will be depressing. But look, the Supreme Court there, right, or the judge there, whomever, said no, Elon Musk has the right to give million-dollar checks. This man
Yeah.
is it. So
How
I think
crazy is this? That this is
so
even
hard.
something that we have to debate, right?
I know.
Million dollar checks.
I know. I know. I just hope, I was talking to a couple of relatives of mine the other day. I said, who just moved to Wisconsin? I said, oh my God, this is such a big deal. They hadn't even changed their voter registration yet. I'm like, are you guys kidding? Do you not realize how important this is? So I know that people in Wisconsin are doing their best. If we could win even one of those Florida seats, Josh Weil, Trump had won that district by a lot, but now they say, we won't really know until election day, but they say Weil is competitive. It'll give a boost. It'll be a huge burst of, encouragement to all of us, if we can win any of those. And if we lose them all, it's going to be pretty depressing, but we'll live to fight another day.
Do you see a candidate out there to lead us in the future? You're from California. What do you think of Gavin Newsom? I got to tell you, I don't know enough about him, Mary, and I know you probably know way more about him than I do, but I saw him on Bill Maher this weekend. He looks like it on paper, not on paper, on TV, he looks like a good candidate.
I think that one candidate is not going to save us. I'm more interested in what's going on inside all of us. The Democrats have got to get overthinking. If only we had another Obama or another Bill. I look at people like Gavin Newsom and I think, well, where were you in 2024? You wouldn't even have the courage to take on the DNC, but whatever. God bless him. I've heard him say some good things. I like Pritzker. I've heard Pritzker say some good. I like Pritzker a lot, actually. I think AOC will be a perfect candidate in 2032. I think she's
Yes,
going to be
she's
walking too early if she falls for the lure of 2028.
Well, she and Bernie, right, are they're bringing in the crowds. When you talk about people, that we're in this period of gestation, we can see it with them too, can't we?
Well, my,
Well,
you know, my, What were you saying?
No, go ahead.
Well, you know, the things that I was running on in 2024 were exactly what AOC and Bernie are saying. And so I'm not, I'm, and I saw the reaction. And so I know that the deamplification of that kind of an agenda was a tragedy, because I think that's what would have won in 2024: universal health care, tuition free college and tech school, raising the minimum wage, ending the drug war, the Department of Peace. I mean, the American people were ready. The problem is not the American people. The problem is the political system, in which certain elites of both parties feel that they have the right to suppress some of the freer voices. So now it's great what Bernie and AOC are accomplishing. They're demonstrating all the excitement out there there is for taking a different, moving in a different direction. And I don't think it's as important which candidate takes that forward in 2028, but what is extremely important is that the Democratic Party actually facilitate democracy next time, as opposed to trying to engineer it or to manipulate it.
Well, that's a great place to leave it. We're running out of time here. And Liberty, do you have any last thing you want to say before we sign off?
I have to say that in all of this time of pain and confusion, it feels like we're being kind of manipulated, right? I'd like to quote Abraham Lincoln and say that a house divided against itself cannot stand. We are not going to allow anyone to divide us into a party that would make us go in that direction. And
Well,
that's
on that note, since you're quoting my favorite Republican, I'm gonna thank you, Marianne Williamson, not only for being on my show, but for being out there and being a voice of in the dialogue that's so important in America today. I appreciate everything you do. I hope you come back again. Thank you so much. You know, we leave with a song every time we play out with a song. We always dedicate it to the person that's been on the show. Last time we did All You Need Is Love by the Beatles. Here's another one. Here's Imagine by John Lennon.
Thank
Thank
you,
you so
Michael. Thank
much.
you, Liberty. Great
Thank
being with you
you.
guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank
We'll
you.
see you next week, folks.
Standing in the shadows of love.